All right, good morning, everyone. It's now 9:05, and we're going to get started. Good morning, my name is David Nahai, and I serve as chair of the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board. Today is Thursday, July 24th. As I said, it's 9:05, and I'd like to call the meeting to order. For people who only want to listen or to watch the meeting, the board's customary website is available. There is a direct link to the website on the meeting agenda posted on our website. In addition, we're receiving presentations and public comments through a Zoom meeting platform and in person. For people who want to listen or watch the meeting in Spanish, we have Spanish interpretation services available through the Zoom platform. Instructions are shown on the slide. And I'd like now to ask one of our Spanish interpreters to please explain how to participate in Spanish.
Good morning. I'm Leticia with CIT, or Cal Interpreting. Spanish interpretation is being provided, and if attendees are joining today, they'd like to listen to today's presentation in Spanish, go to the interpretation icon in your meeting or your webinar controls. You will see the language channels there. You select Spanish. There's an option there that's to mute original audio to listen to the interpreted language only. And in order to use the language interpretation feature, attendees must download the Zoom application on their desktop, the smartphone, or tablet. For tech or language interpretation assistance, email Bob at agpvideo.com. Thank you.
Thank you. Please note that for all LA Regional Water Quality Control Board meetings, there is no expectation of privacy regarding any communications. Meetings are recorded and names of participants are listed in the Zoom forum. Participation in a recorded meeting will be deemed consent to be recorded. Our scheduled June 24th board meeting was canceled due to last-minute issues with the meeting location, and an alternative location could not be found in time to relocate the meeting to another venue. Having said that, now we will move on to a roll call so that we can establish a quorum. Helen, will you run the roll?
Good morning. Vice Chair Ashion.
Present.
Board Member Camacho.
Here.
Board Member Christensen.
Here.
Board Member Mendez.
Here.
Chair Nahai.
Present.
Roll call completed. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have a quorum. Board Member Camacho has requested to participate remotely in this meeting in accordance with the provisions of the Bagley-Keene Open Meetings Act, specifically Government Code Section 11123.2. Remote participation requires that a quorum of the board members be physically present at a single teleconference location that is open, visible, and audible to the public. And we have that. Board Member Camacho may proceed with remotely participating in this public meeting, although she did not disclose her precise location. She must disclose whether there are any individuals 18 years or older present in the same location as she, as well as the general nature of her relationship with those individuals. Further, Government Code Section 11123.2 requires that Board Member Camacho remain on camera for the entire open portion of the public meeting unless there is a poor internet connection or it would be technologically impracticable to do so. If Board Member Camacho needs to turn off her camera during the open portion of the meeting, she must announce her reason for doing so. Let me ask our counsel if there are any other legal issues to be dealt with respect to Board Member Camacho's remote participation in the meeting? There are none. Okay, thank you. Next, we will proceed to the order of the agenda. I'll ask our Executive Director, Susanna Arredondo, if there are any changes to the order of the agenda.
Good morning, Chair. I will ask that item 12 be moved to the uncontested items. That's AES Redondo Beach. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we need to take a vote on that at this point, or later on to move it to the uncontested calendar? Does that require a vote?
That doesn't require a vote.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda is the approval of draft minutes for the May 22nd, 2025 meeting. So we'll move to that item, which is item number 3, and I will ask if there are any changes to the draft meeting minutes. Any changes? No. I will ask for a motion to and a second to approve the draft minutes for the May 22nd meeting.
I'll move.
I have a motion from Board Member Ashtian.
Second.
And a second from Board Member Christensen. Please call the roll.
Vice Chair Ashtian?
Yes.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item number 4. This concerns ex parte disclosures on the part of board members. So I will first ask each board member whether there are any ex parte communication disclosures that need to be reported. I'll start with Board Member Mendez.
No ex parte.
Vice Chair Ashtian?
None, thank you.
Board Member Christensen?
None.
And I have none to report. We'll move on next to board member reports. These are items of general interest that board members may wish to communicate with the public about. I will start with Board Member Mendez.
Good morning, and good morning to Board Member Camacho online. It's a pleasure to be back. I know we've been gone for a couple of months. Just two quick announcements. Earlier this month, I did attend the Hazards Application Workshop, which brings together practitioners and scholars engaged in hazard mitigation and recovery efforts. And happy to say that, or not so happy, that issues of water are starting and water quality are starting to come up more in disaster planning issues. And in the second good note that I already got congratulations from Board Member Ashtian is that earlier this month, July 1st, I received tenure, and so now I'm Associate Professor of Environmental Policy and Planning, and also received an honorific title of Chancellor's Fellow. So thank you.
Well, that requires a round of before I move to you, Vice Chair, on the issue of general reporting. Board Member Camacho, I forgot to ask you if you have any ex parte disclosures to communicate.
I have no ex parte communications.
Okay, thank you. All right, Vice Chair Ashtian.
Did she have to say if there's people under over 18? Mm-hmm. Does she have to say if there's people over 18 in her location?
Good morning, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well. I don't have that much to report, despite the fact that we've been gone for a couple of months. But I did want to say, Chair Nahai and I had a wonderful meeting with a couple of the environmental protection groups. So we appreciate the outreach from the public to set up meetings and to discuss issues generally. So looking forward to having more of those meetings with others. And I am also looking forward to, we are doing a fire tour next week that I think some of the members of our board have already been on and are going to discuss in their reports, and looking forward to that, and looking forward to discussing it in further detail at next month's meeting. So thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Camacho, any items you would like to speak to us about?
Yes, I did want to mention that I was able to participate in the Safe Clean Water Regional Oversight Committee Biennial Report Working Group. and that was on July 17th. And just a little bit of explanation on the biannual report, that it is a comprehensive document which summarizes the Safe Clean Water Program progress and expenditures. It's due in December of 2025, typically, but we're requesting an extension to February of 2026 because we are currently re-looking at the recommendation based on our review of the initial watershed plans, which are going to be coming to the ROC on August 12th or 13th. And so a lot of work happening, and the initial plans are going to be addressing water quality metrics and goals and objectives, concrete goals and objectives. And so we're really looking forward to reviewing that document for each watershed. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Christensen.
Yes, thank you. As you well know, we had the opportunity to go on a tour of the Eaton fire burn area just last week, actually. And it was led by Director of Public Works and Flood Control District, Mark Pastrella. He and his team did an excellent job sort of orienting to us to the various water quality protection precautions and mitigations that they've put in place. And, you know, I have to say it was startling to see how much work has already been done. You know, I actually expected to see charred remains of structures and things like that, and that's not really what the area looks like. You know, these areas, these properties have all been scraped clean, down to at least 6 inches, some of them much further than that. They have every single property, I think, had the, what are those called? The hay things, the straw wattles, thank you, set up, which are just perimeters, basically, you know, low barricades that prevent runoff. We went to the Army Corps of Engineers site where they actually take all of the refuse and rubble to divide, you know, concrete from organics and so on. And they walked us through, you know, exactly their process and where all of the material goes and what happens to that material. Happy to hear that the concrete ends up getting crushed up and reused and so on. So all of this to say, I was not only impressed with the tour, but relieved to see such progress. I was relieved to hear from Director Pastrella that though the state of California has relaxed building standards for the purpose of rebuilding these burn areas, the county is actually not relaxing building standards and is incentivizing different materials and new ways of building to further ensure fire resilience. You know, these areas will continue to be in the path of fire, and so I have always been concerned that the relaxing of building standards would just mean certain disaster again. And I thought Mr. Pastrella did a wonderful job in making sure that the areas he has authority over remain safe. So all that to say that there is hope and there is progress. That's it for me.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I'll add just a couple of comments to what Board Member Christensen said about the tour. First, I will say this, that we felt that it was really incumbent on this board to do an in-person tour of Altadena and the Eaton fire areas and to gain some knowledge of what the community has been through and the efforts at rebuilding and recovery. Accompanying Board Member Christensen and I on the tour were our executive officer, Susanna Arredondo, and our AEOs, Russ Colby and Jenny Newman, and also our attorney, Amelia Carter, was there with us as well to make sure we didn't do anything wrong. And she did a wonderful job of making sure we didn't do anything wrong. This was, and I have to add that next week, I believe that Board Member Ashton and Board Member Mendez will go on the same tour so that the entire, and also I think State Board Member Laurel Firestone is scheduled to attend that tour as well. So this is both to gain first-hand experience of what is going on, especially in terms of environmental issues, but to also understand the community and to show, I think, solidarity and empathy with what it is that community has gone through. The tour was quite long, and we covered numerous areas, you know, from the Lincoln Debris Basin to a new house that is being built with updated standards to make it really fire resilient. We saw various other, you know, basins and got an idea of the kind of calamity that had befallen the area. We did meet with the Army Corps of Engineers with a colonel who has been on site for all of this time to ensure the debris removal and the removal of 6 inches of topsoil. I actually asked him about the 6 inches, why six, why not five, why not seven, why not testing, just what went to determining that decision. His response really was that FEMA had decided this, and the Army Corps' job was to carry out what FEMA had wanted. So I think it really falls on the residents who are rebuilding to ensure that there is not contamination below that 6-inch period, and hopefully the state, federal, so hopefully there will be resources to assist people in doing that. I'll finish by saying this. The tour finished at an area called the one-stop center that the county has set up where people can go to get their permit, and it really is a one-stop center, composed of folks that really have decision-making power. And by establishing that center, they're able to process rebuilding permits within, they told us, a 56-day period, which they're trying to reduce even further. So I think there really is a model that perhaps can be emulated in other places as we deal with our own homelessness and housing crisis here in Los Angeles and elsewhere. So it was fascinating. It was eye-opening on the one hand, very sad to see all of these empty lots. Yes, they've been cleaned, but you can feel the fact that there were families living in those houses and that their lives were upended. And recently I heard that remains of more bodies have been found as a result of the Eaton fire. So it's lives uprooted, lives lost. And now the recovery and rebuilding and healing has to take place. And the other thing that strikes you when you go on a tour like that is that you'll have lots that are destroyed. There is nothing there, and right next to them will be a house, mm-hmm. completely intact, just spared from the fire by some I don't know twist of fate that one struggles to understand. Anyway, I'll stop there. But I hope that you, Vice Chair Ashton, and you, Board Member Mendez, will have the same experience of illumination and enlightenment and compassion when you take that tour. And it certainly, I think, gives us a much better perspective as we deal with the contamination issues and discharge our responsibilities as the Regional Water Board. So,
Chair, may I add just one thing?
Of course.
It's something that I brought up, I think, in our last meeting. I mentioned the Eaton Fire Residents United. It's a grassroots group made up primarily of some folks who were in that area, but whose homes were spared. And I think their primary concern has been contamination that their homes have absorbed, you know, through the walls, through the furniture, through the carpet, the toxic smoke and ash carried chemicals that just should not be breathed and maybe continuing to off-gas. And their whole request has been they need resources, resources to understand what they're up against, resources for testing and figuring out what even is in their homes. And I asked Director Pastrella about that on this tour, and I was relieved to hear him say that they're already in contact with that group. He says that they have a website where they can go and request that sort of resource, and that they've worked very closely together. I will follow up, of course, with that group to make sure that they are aware of those resources and have what they need. But just to say, you know, the members of that community who lost their homes, certainly their lives are altered forever. And the people, I think, who did, whose homes and properties did survive also are up against a pretty steep challenge. Living in a neighborhood like that, that's just leveled and you're just left there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's got to be hard. So happy to hear, though, that the county has addressed that directly. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's move on now to the next item, which is the Executive Officer's Report. Ms. Arredondo.
Thank you, Chair. I do have one update. This is the Eaton Fire Recovery Tour. On July 16th, Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board Chair Nahai and Board Member Christensen and staff attended a tour of the Eaton Fire area. On the tour, the Los Angeles County Department of Public Works provided a briefing on infrastructure recovery, regulatory compliance, and environmental stewardship addressing the Eaton Fire. Public Works Director Mark Pastrella led the tour, and at each tour stop, an assistant deputy director provided a description of a particular recovery project, including a bridge reconstruction and a debris basin cleanout, or a summary of compliance with permit requirements during the fire response. The last stop of the tour was a one-stop permit shop, where residents who had lost their homes to the fire could meet with multiple county departments in one location to help them rebuild. A similar tour is planned for July 30th. The expected attendees include Board Member Mendez and Ashion, State Board Member Firestone, and as well as Los Angeles County Supervisor Chair Catherine Barker. Next part of my verbal report, the Department of Toxic Substances Control will provide an update on the cleanup efforts at the Santa Susana Field Laboratory. I will turn it over to Mindy Mathias and Stephen Becker, who oversee the project.
Good morning. Thank you, Susanna. There's the presentation. So my name is Mindy Mathias, and I am the DTSC unit supervisor for the Santa Susana Field Laboratory project. We will refer to it as SSFL. Before we get started, we'd like to acknowledge and thank the Regional Water Quality Control Board staff and management for their ongoing collaboration and support on the SSFL project. We value our partnership and look forward to continuing it going forward. DTSC was asked to provide an update on the SSFL project and cleanup activities at today's board meeting. Next slide, please. The 2,849-acre SSFL site is located in the Simi Hills area of Ventura County, approximately 30 miles northwest of downtown Los Angeles, and you can see that in the map here. Next slide. The This map shows the operational areas, which are called RCRA Facility Investigation or RFI sites, for the three responsible parties. The RFI sites were operational areas that were the focus of investigations to determine the degree and extent of contamination from these areas. Next slide. I'd like to note that though a formal cleanup has yet to begin Santa Susana Field Laboratory, there are several important interim cleanup projects that have been conducted at the site to date. Most recently, Boeing conducted cleanup at the former shooting range and the Area 1 burn pit. This work was required under two imminent and substantial endangerment or emergency orders. Cleanup at the shooting range started in June of 2023, and it was completed in January of this year. The interim cleanup at the Area 1 burn pit started in March 2024 and is ongoing. The interim cleanup at the Area 1 burn pit is anticipated to be completed this fall. Next slide, please. As part of the 2022 DTSC-Boeing settlement agreement, DTSC and Boeing agreed to a rigorous schedule to move into soil and groundwater cleanup in Boeing's areas at SSFL. The current corrective action schedule for Boeing's areas at SSFL is posted on DTSC's SSFL website. For a RCRA cleanup, the responsible party prepares a corrective measure study, or CMS, which identifies, evaluates, and recommends a remedy for a site. DTSC reviews the CMS and prepares a draft statement of basis to document our remedy decision. These documents are released for public review and comment before they're finalized. Boeing is scheduled to provide the revised groundwater CMS to DTSC for review in October. DTSC will coordinate with the Water Board to make sure all of the comments have been addressed. The draft decision document, the statement of basis for groundwater cleanup, is scheduled to be released for public review and comment in February 2026. DTSC is currently preparing the draft statement of basis for soil and soil vapor cleanup with the support of the Water Board staff. The document is scheduled to be released for public review and comment next month in August. Next slide, please. This slide presents anticipated timeframes for public comment periods for cleanup decision documents. The public comment period for NASA's Phase 1 groundwater project was completed last month in June. DTSC is reviewing the public comments received, preparing responses, and will issue a final remedy decision later this year. The first soil decision document for the Boeing areas of responsibility is scheduled to be released for public comment next month in August. Next slide, please. There are many ways to stay updated on the SSFL project. Consider signing up for the DTSC SSFL email list, visiting the DTSC SSFL website, and participating in one of our upcoming meetings. The next scheduled public meeting is to discuss the cleanup remedy for Boeing soil and soil vapor in late August or early September. Links for these resources are provided on the slide. I would like to note that the link that's on here to sign up for the email list, it currently, I think, leads to an error, which I just found out about this morning. So if you do try to sign up for the SSFL email list and that happens, please send us an email and we can manually add you to the SSFL email list. And probably the best person to email would be our public participation manager, Jamie Slaughter. And that information is on our SSFL website, contact us area. So another thing I would like to mention is that last year DTSC introduced STREAM, which is the SSFL tool for response, engagement, and answer management, which is an online platform that allows community members to ask questions, report issues, or leave comments relating to the SSFL cleanup project. So this concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
That is the only presentation we're receiving from DTSC. Okay, well, I'll open it up. Thank you very much. Thank you for your presentation. I'll open it up for questions from board members. Any? Board Member Camacho, do you have any questions? You don't have to have a question. I'm just offering.
No, I do have just one clarifying question. I just wanted to know from Ms. Mathias, are we on schedule with, you know, the deliverables that we told the community were initially providing? Is everything on schedule? And if not, what are the differentials?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So we are on our current schedule, and we are committed to the Boeing and DTSC settlement agreement schedule. There have been some instances where we mutually agreed for, you know, really compelling reasons to mutually extend the schedule, but we are on the current the current schedule. There may be, you know, minor delays in the schedule, but both parties are really committed to moving things forward.
Yeah, so hopefully any of these schedule changes are going to be fully communicated in your stream platform. That would be a good thing to do.
Yeah, we update our SSVIL webpage. There's a webpage area for schedule. And so that schedule that was on the slide that showed like the upcoming public decision documents, when we're expecting to release them, we keep that up to date. So that one is currently up to date of like when we anticipate starting public comment periods. And then we also post in the same spot the most recent Boeing soil schedule. Boeing corrective action schedule. Oh boy. Yeah, the Boeing corrective action schedule. So that's the soil and the groundwater components. So those are both posted on the website and updated as, you know, as things change.
Thank you.
So if I could just get some clarification, because that was exactly my question, and thank you again for your presentation and for communicating with us. So when you say we're on track regarding the current schedule, that means that you're not on track regarding the original schedule. But there have been extensions that have been agreed upon between DTSC and Boeing, and therefore there is this new current schedule, and according to that you're proceeding forward. But do you anticipate then that the current schedule could also, that we will have a new current schedule because there will be more extensions that will be agreed upon? Or can folks count on the current schedule as being, you know, more or less immutable?
We are doing our best to maintain the current schedule, but things do come up, and so that's why, you know, we post revised versions of the schedule anytime things do come up and require us to extend the schedule. That's part of our commitment to transparency, both in the settlement agreement and, you know, DTSC also. So, you know, there could be some schedule delays, minor schedule delays, but we are committed to doing our best to meet the schedule that's been agreed upon.
I appreciate that. When you post these extensions, and I understand that in full transparency they're disclosed, do you receive, I mean, does the community have adequate access to see that, to comment on it, to give you feedback on extensions that are being negotiated and agreed upon?
So when extensions are agreed upon, they are documented and those letters are posted on our website. And then when we post new schedules, we typically send out an e-blast to our email list. So we haven't received any comments from the public on the schedule changes.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. I do have a question for staff. Any other questions for Ms. Mathias? Okay. Thank you very, very much. So my question for staff is that there were references to various reports that are coming out in August, September. I just want to make sure that as those reports come out, that you receive them, review them, analyze them, digest them as to what they are, and that we can have some process under which those reports can be summarized and reported to the board. Is that possible to do? Okay. Well, thank you very, very much. Thanks for coming, and we hope that you'll join us again in the future with updates as you go through this process. And thanks for your service. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Moving on, that's it for the EO report.
Correct. That concludes my report.
Okay. I think the last time I skipped over the EO report and got suitably chastised and scolded for it. Oh, David, you forgot the EO report, so I want to make sure that we got it all there. All right. Next is the update from the State Water Board, and very, very pleased to have State Board member Laurel Firestone with us to give us her thoughts and insights. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me. And I am looking forward to next week's tour. And I just really appreciate the update and opportunity to connect and get a firsthand view of that. I know it's continues to be on the top of mind for folks up in Sacramento as well. So just to give you a flavor of things going on at the State Water Board, actually today we will be releasing the updated Bay Delta Plan update, which is, we will have hearings and public comments, so more information will be coming out today on that. We have also been really focused on funding at the last, both June and July, conducted workshops on both the Clean Water SRF and now the Drinking Water SRF. So those are the state funding intended use plans that we adopt and update annually. And also the Safer Fund Expenditure Plan. So that's really all of our both clean water and drinking water funding sources. There's a lot of uncertainty on the federal side in terms of future funding, but we are moving forward to make sure we're getting out the funding that we do have. I guess a few highlights to include is there is federal funding that we have and are working to get out quickly around emerging contaminants, including PFAS, which I know is a major issue. And that it can also be used for things like manganese, 1-2-3 TCP, and other emerging contaminants where there's not a federal hasn't been a federal a longstanding federal MCL. We also got an update on the drinking water intended use plan, the comment period's still open, and we are looking to adopt the clean water intended use plan next month. We also got an update on our efforts around a wastewater needs assessment, and that is an ongoing multi-year effort to start to really get a handle on needs, but particularly areas where there's inadequate access to sanitation, both in terms of, water treatment and sanitary sewer collection systems, but also on-site septic and other individual waste disposal systems. I know I brought up the fact that there's still some cesspools out there. So we are looking forward to the next step. There's going to be a phase one that's really looking at the methodology and data sets. There's a big effort to map things that have never been mapped before on this. And then there'll be a list that is developed as the sort of preliminary list for inadequate or failing needs, both on the system side, but also looking at risk areas and how we're thinking about statewide needs for on-site. So that will be in the future, but we are making our way and got a really good update on that. And you can get more information on the program website. UCLA is actually the lead, the Lufkin Center on that effort. Let's see. Continuing work on the Delta Conveyance Project through the Administrative Hearing Office. There's continued hearings and will be continuing through August and September and October. We adopted the cross-control policy handbook amendment, which delayed really a few things around getting sort of because there were challenges on getting certified health. And so we've adopted an amendment to provide some more time for that. This is in June, approved a resolution to return the first sub-basin to Department of Water Resources under SGMA. So this is the first time that we will have identified or taken action to do that. We are also considering next month, we received comments on this, but next month, updates and looking to adopt new water measurement and reporting regulations to update how water rights is reported, in particular because we are rolling out this summer our water rights data system upwards and Cal Waters, basically, which is bringing us into the 21st century rather than all paper records. So a lot going on. I'm happy to answer any questions, but that's a little a bit of an overview.
Thank you very, very much. There are any questions for Board Member Firestone? Hearing none. Thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you.
As always, a very thorough, comprehensive presentation. Appreciate it so much. Okay. Thanks. All right. Our next item is public forum. I am going to take a 10-minute break. I have a number of cards for public forum. I want to sort them all out. And I want to have a conversation with our EO about some of them because I have so many that are from the same organization, and some are virtual, some are in person. So I want to take a few minutes and make sure that we do this properly and in an organized way. So it's now 9:50. We'll see you again at 10 o'clock. All right, everyone, let's come back to order, please. That took just a little bit longer than 10 minutes through no fault of mine, I assure you. I won't say whose fault that was, but not mine. Anyway, as you'll all recall, we had taken item number 12 off the consent calendar and had put it onto the consent calendar. We'd made it an uncontested matter. We're going to move item 12 back to our normal schedule as a contested item, although it is not truly being contested, but there are some comments that a number of folks would like to make with respect to number 12. So we're going to deal with that first. So I will ask first for any staff presentation that we have on that. Let's start there.
Hi, Chair Nahai. This is Jenny Newman. We don't have a staff presentation prepared for item 12, but we did prepare a written staff report that was included in your board agenda package that you received a couple Fridays ago. And we are here to answer questions in response to the public comment, if you have any.
All right. Thank you. And since it is being moved to the contested items, I believe I do need to administer the oath. Correct?
Yes, and I just wanted to clarify that you definitely want to do this first as opposed to in the order on revert it to the original order on the agenda since public forum is item 7.
Correct. Okay. We're going to deal with number 12 first.
Okay.
And then we'll move to public forum.
Yes, and administer the oath, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so with respect to number 12, will everyone testifying on item number 12 please stand and take the following oath? Okay. Do you promise that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? Please respond by saying yes or I do. Okay. Did everyone respond?
Yes.
Okay. All right, fine. So then with respect to number 12, I have a number of cards that I'm going to call on. First of all, from LA Waterkeeper, we have some speakers on number 12. Would you please come up to the podium? And into you, Benjamin Harris, we know.
Yes.
And who is with you?
Hi, yes, I'll let him introduce himself.
Hi, my name is Hayden Puccino. I'm one of the legal interns with LA Waterkeeper from UCLA Law.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, Chair, for putting this back on the agenda. We just wanted to offer a quick comment while we're here. We have four legal interns for the summer, so I wanted to give them a chance to come and participate in the board meeting. I just wanted to say from LA Waterkeeper standpoint on this Redondo Beach Generating Station matter, we support the termination of this permit and are really interested in seeing what the monitoring results show under the investigative order. I would be somewhat concerned about the potential for continued pollution being discharged and runoff from the site, so I'm glad that that's being considered in this item. A few questions just wanted to ask and see if the board staff might have an inclination about, has the board considered sampling for PFAS in the stormwater runoff? Because I know that could be a potential pollutant source at some of these generating stations, especially if they use the firefighting foam as kind of an emergency measure on site. So I just wanted to know if that was considered as part of the testing requirements. And then also, what are the consequences that the site might be facing from an enforcement standpoint, knowing that there has been some past pollution issues, not just from the once through cooling discharges, but also stormwater runoff? Is there any indication of any potential enforcement? Are there potential mitigation projects that the site owner has been, you know, considering or may be considered as part of an enforcement action? And then I want to let Hayden ask a final question as well.
Yeah, I'd like to express my support for terminating the permit now that the facility is in compliance with the State Board's OTC policy. I'd also like to echo Ben's comments. And then my final question for you all would be, is there will the owner sell the land for a different land use? What do we know anything about the what the owner's planned land use for the facility is going to be? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have any responses to the question that was posed about what the fate of the site might be in the future, what lands there are?
Yes, I'll turn that over to Jung-hee Lim. She's the manager of the watershed permitting section.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. My name is Jung-hee Lim for the watershed regulatory section manager. So two things I'd like to mention it about it, that the purpose of this 13383 order is not just keeping them the AES Redondo free tickets. For our intention is to collect information for the future permit requirements, whether they need a separate MPDS permit or not. So we are, these informations will be help us to determine eventually what other requirements to control this pollutant, if any, comes from their facility to develop the permit requirements later on. So regarding the PFAS requirements, we have not considered because we're assuming that the stormwater comes from the facility is it has to be purely stormwater itself. If there's anything else comes from it, we might ask the additional requirements for the future. And also regarding to the enforcement terms, I have to probably ask to the Russ Colby about it, but mainly that the results of the monitoring comes from the 13383 order, if there's any exceedance or not, because we do not have any requirements for the permit limitations. We may not go after for the whether the single data point, but in holistically, the enforcement side may approach some other things based on the monitoring reports and the monitoring data results. So regarding to the what the future owner will do the land, that question is for the facility management teams. I am not sure whether they are available at this point. So if they're not available at this point, we can get back to you on that once we get the information from the facility.
Okay.
Chair Nahai, I hate to put the facility on the spot. I do think there is a representative from AES on the Zoom call. Do you mind showing your screen? Yes, on the Zoom call, Jose Perez from the AES has his hand up, so maybe he would like to address the last question about land use.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, well, AES has sold the property to the new owner. We're not entirely sure what the final product will be. At this time, but we'll leave that up to the new owner.
Okay. All right, thank you. I have one other card with respect to item number 12, and it's a card from Ms. Dori Raskin. I don't know if that's virtual or in person.
She's virtual. She's in the Zoom meeting.
Okay. So for 3 minutes on item number 12.
Dori Raskin, if you want to speak on item 12, you can unmute yourself and make your comment now.
Is there a technical issue?
There doesn't appear to be a technical issue. She is staying on mute. So she may not be expecting to be speaking right now. We don't know if she's actually there. So we could move on and come back to her. I understand she's also registered for
She's also registered for public forum and number 11, but I want to deal with 12. I want to take the vote.
I see. Well, we don't need to call on her. I'm sorry. If she's registered for item 11, that's okay. We're on item 12 now.
Okay.
I'm very sorry. I misunderstood.
All right. In that case, I'm going to move on with respect to item number 12. I'll move that we adopt the tentative termination order as recommended by staff on this item. I have a second from Board Member Christensen. Would you please call the roll?
Vice Chair Ashian?
Yes, thank you.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you. And so now we can move to public forum. So any person may address the board regarding any matter within the board's jurisdiction, provided the matter does not appear elsewhere on the agenda, has not been scheduled to appear on a future agenda, and is not expected to be imminently scheduled for the board's consideration. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to address the board unless additional time has been approved in advance. Today, no additional time has been approved in advance. The comments during public forum must be on items that are not pending or scheduled to appear on a future agenda and are not otherwise on today's agenda. We will start first with in-person speakers. We will then go to those who've registered in advance to speak remotely. And then finally, we will go to others who are participating remotely who wish to speak. After in-person speakers are concluded, those that have registered in advance via the online registration Zoom to speak remotely will be asked to raise their Zoom hand. And after those have been registered have spoken, the chair will ask for any others wishing to speak. So we're going to start with those who are going to be in person on public forum, and I will start with, and I know we're waiting for Ms. Raskin, but I will start with Michael Rincon from Physicians for Social Responsibility.
Good morning, board. It's a nice day outside, so hopefully we can end a little early and we can be outside. I'm specifically talking on the item related to the executive officer's report around Santa Susana. First, again, my name is Michael Rincon. I am the research and policy manager at Physicians for Social Responsibility Los Angeles. I am also a community member in Thousand Oaks that is also adjacent to the facility. I'm here talking because I am both frustrated and concerned around what has been going on with DTSC, or with Santa Susana, sorry. DTSC is once again, from our perspective, once again putting polluters ahead of public health, and they want to throw out the 2010 administrative orders of consent, which are the very agreements that require a full cleanup of the Santa Susana field lab to background levels, and replace them with something vague and dangerous being referred to as multiple lines of evidence, or MLE. This new scheme would allow contamination to remain at thousands of times higher than what the AOCs allow. In other words, DTSC wants to let polluters walk away from cleaning up the mess they created. It gets worse. DTSC is also set to approve a so-called groundwater cleanup for NASA that only looks at 3 out of the 53 contaminated wells. It would clean up only a few of the many toxic chemicals found on site and do so to levels still hundreds of times above health protective limits. This is not a cleanup, it is an abandonment. It lets NASA off the hook for most of its groundwater pollution. This is part of a long, disturbing pattern. For example, in 2022, DTSC struck a secret deal with Boeing to weaken the cleanup standards by hundreds or even thousands of times with no public input and no environmental review. That illegal deal is now the subject of a CEQA lawsuit, which also implicates the LA Regional Water Board for collaborating with DTSC and Boeing to push it through. That brings me to you. The LA Regional Water Board, you do have the authority to do something on this matter, and you can refuse to rubber stamp the DTSC's rollbacks. You can also hold DTSC and polluters accountable for delaying and pretty much proceeding with a process that is not typical of guidelines and other regulations and law. you can say no to partial cleanups, backroom deals, and environmental injustice, and you should, because communities have fought for decades for a cleanup and not another betrayal. We are, in a sense, we are tired of being ignored. The Water Board has a duty to protect public health, and this is a major public health issue. On top of that, the main reason why there's an NPDES permit is because this is a cleanup site, and no runoff is supposed to be coming off the site whatsoever, and it's supposed to be controlled. But if the site had been cleaned up to the date that it was supposed to have been already cleaned up, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for keeping to 3 minutes exactly. I appreciate that. Okay. Next for public forum, I don't know if Ms. Raskin is back, but we'll hear next from LA Waterkeeper. I don't know how many would want to come to the podium, but
I'm bringing the whole army this time.
Yes.
Good morning again.
And a very impressive army they are, too.
Yes, you already heard from Hayden and myself, so I'll let the other three interns speak for about a minute each on some questions that they have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Olivia Essie, and I'm a law student at USC. As the board is likely aware, the 2024 integrated report identified new impairments in our region's waters, but the public has not yet received updates about how the board plans to address these. So for example, there are 9 new toxic pollutants added as impairments for LA River Reach 1 near the estuary, and these are not covered by a previous TMDL. So we are requesting that board staff do a presentation at a future meeting on these new impairments identified, including your plan to address them, the timeline, and other details around establishing new TMDLs or other compliance plans. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Julianne. I'm also a legal intern for LA Waterkeeper and a law student at UCLA Law. I've spent the summer researching what we can do to recover from the fires from a water perspective, focusing mainly on managed retreat as a possible solution. I really appreciated your update at the beginning of the meeting about what is being done in terms of fire recovery, but I have a few questions about what can be done proactively. My first question is, have any of the executive orders by the governor's office affected the ability of the board to regulate stormwater discharge from construction sites in fire-impacted zones, including the board's ability to enforce the construction general permit? And my next question is, if there are any other permitting authorities that the board can use to protect waters from further pollution after future wildfires. For example, could the board assist with ensuring that new construction projects in fire-impacted areas are designed with additional pollution controls? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Perla Cervantes. I'm also at UCLA Law and a legal intern at Waterkeeper, LA Waterkeeper. So I've been researching ballast water discharges and invasive species regulation with focus on enforcement gaps and what local or regional agencies can do, especially during an ongoing but delayed regulatory transition under the Vessel Incidental Discharge Act, or VIDA. Ballast water is a major pathway for invasive marine species to spread to new waters around the world, and enforcement remains inconsistent. While the EPA and Coast Guard share primary authority, the impacts of ballast discharges are felt locally, especially at high-traffic ports like LA and Long Beach. So I wanted to ask, what authority does the regional board currently have, if any, over ballast water discharges under the Clean Water Act, the Vessel General Permit, or through any other means? I understand that direct regulation of discharges may not fall squarely within the board's core jurisdiction, but are there ways the board can support or mirror technology-based standards using existing water quality permitting authority or possibly through land use tools? Thank you.
Thank you. I have three questions were posed that I think we should see if there are any responses to them. So the one question was about what can be done proactively by the regional board with respect to what we can all expect will be the next fire calamity. I wonder if we have an answer for that.
I'm going to turn it over to AEO Newman to respond to that.
Good morning. I just wanted to recognize those were all excellent questions, and it shows that these interns are on the right track. They have their finger on the pulse of the water issues that we are facing and studying and addressing ourselves. With respect to our specific authorities to help build in a resilient manner, we have many, and we are working with the state and local partners on how to execute those authorities and roll them out. And it's a coordinated and complicated effort, and we are looking into it.
Okay. Thank you. And then there was another question that was posed about our TMDL program and where we stand with respect to developing and enforcing TMDLs as to various constituents. Do you have a response?
I can answer that one, too. So the integrated report contains a staff report and explains all of the laws and regulations underlying that report, and it lays out, in general, the process for when a pollutant water body combination is placed on the 303D list and how and when a TMDL is adopted to address it or some other equivalent action to a TMDL. So we staff do not have any plans to come to the board and present on our region-specific TMDL development plan for those newly added water body pollutant combinations, but it is something that staff could do. Our basin planning TMDL program could provide the board an update on our approach for addressing impairments, and it's been a while since this board has seen a TMDL, so it might be a good idea for some sort of information item. That being said, staff, especially in this program, is very busy right now, still in fire response recovery, and we have some resource issues in that program. But we're building back up, and I can't promise anything soon, but I think it's a good idea to brief the board on and provide an information item about our TMDL process.
All right, thank you. Thank you, and thank you again for all of you to come and present. Very much appreciated, and hope that in the future this board will see more of you. Thanks. Okay. next, on public forum, I want to see if...
Oh. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Board Member Camacho, go ahead.
Yeah, but I was going to suggest that maybe the integrated report or some summaries of the progress of that could be included in future EO reports rather than a full-blown presentation with some links, and I think that would be very beneficial to all of us.
Thank you. Very true. Go ahead.
I'd just also like to reiterate, thank the students for coming in here and spending their summer internship in law school on public interest law and understanding, despite all the attacks and accusations against government, particularly state and federal government, that you're maintaining hopefully the faith and see the value of public service in public interest law. So I thank you for that. And then in terms of some of the proactive issues, maybe one avenue would be useful is looking at the dashboard. I can't remember the name of our water dashboard for the fire area. Squirt, I think it was Squirt, right? That might be something interesting to look in there. What are the proactive findings? What are the key findings, and what are some of the proactive measures that you can analyze from those findings from the dashboard? That might be helpful for us, too, as well. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Marissa, did you have something? Okay. All right. We're continuing with public forum. So is Dori Raskin now available for 3 minutes?
She's on.
Is Dori? She muted?
Can you unmute yourself, Dori Raskin?
Okay, all right. Well, I'm going to continue with the other virtual cards that we have, and then maybe we can come back to her later on. So the first virtual for 3 minutes is Mr. Ray Tahir.
Good morning, and thank you. I have a PowerPoint presentation. There you go. Next slide, please. At last month's meeting, I asked Chair Nahai what criteria is used to determine requests for more than 3 minutes on an agenda item, including public forum. I've yet to get a response. Next, at the April board meeting, AEO Newman said in response to my request for water quality monitoring data pertaining to the Altadena fire, that the information is available on the LA County Environmental Health Dashboard. As of today, the data I have requested is not on this website. Despite Mr. Nahai's request that Ms. Newman make sure that I have a link to access the information I'm looking for. Next, Ms. Newman also stated the water quality monitoring data was also conducted by MS4 for Matisse. As I mentioned at the May meeting, MS4 monitoring data covering the fire was not submitted, and this is because it was never done. Next slide, please. Recently, Council Nunez defended Ms. Newman by informing me that the Regional Water Board has not received the Altadena monitoring data yet. My understanding is that we do not expect to receive it until December 15th of this year as part of the annual MS4 monitoring package. Staff has reached out to SCWRP to see if MS4 data was voluntarily submitted to SCWRP, but I don't know that we have received a response yet. The fact of the matter is that MS4 monitoring data, outfall and receiving water data for Altadena will not be in the December monitoring data submittal because, one, none of the outfalls that received runoff from Altadena have been identified in the coordinated integrated monitoring plans, either for the Upper LA River or the Rio Hondo San Gabriel River watershed groups. And two, according to the monitoring data submitted by the State Board's 5212 spreadsheet, Altadena reaches are not referenced, namely Rubio and Eastern Marshes. As a consequence, impacted communities cannot submit any SCWRP data because it does not exist. It is unrealistic to believe that permittees have already reached out to SCWRP, especially given that the data won't be available until December. Bottom line, Ms. Newman needs to be frank. If the data is not available, she should just say so. And Ms. Nunez also needs to get her facts straight. Next slide, please. Okay, well, The approval of the Ventura WIMP was not valid. For one thing, WIMPs in general require approval from the governing board, not staff. Here's what the MS4 permit says under watershed management program implementation. Each permittee shall begin implementing the WIMP immediately upon approval of a program by the LA Water Board. Notwithstanding Part 9E, adaptive management of this order, permittees may propose WIMP modifications at any time during the term of this order as necessary. Permittees shall provide written requests explaining the nature of the proposed modification and justification for consideration by the Los Angeles Region Board, not staff. Next slide.
Okay, I need you to wrap up, Mr. Tahir, please.
I will. Here's a lot.
Okay.
Could you put my presentation back up, please? Yeah, I'm in the final stretch right here, okay?
All right. Thanks very much. Thanks very much. Regarding your question about...
I haven't completed it yet, sir. It's really important that I mention this.
What?
So could you please put the presentation back on?
3 minutes are up.
I can't make out what Mr. Tahir is saying.
He's saying he wants to keep going.
Mr. Tahir, he has one more slide to
show. No, you cannot just keep going. There's a 3-minute time limit. You know this better than anybody.
I'm aware of that, but there are some delays.
You cannot just keep going.
No, but can I mention something in connection with the Altadena fire? That
you know, I'm going to move on to the next person who's waiting in line and who's willing to respect the 3-minute cutoff. You're a veteran. You know how to keep to 3 minutes. We hear from you every time, and every time you do the same thing. Okay, we're going to move on.
And if you made exceptions before in the past, right. So I don't want to hear.
Please stop. Okay. Our next speaker virtually is Ms. Melissa Bumstead from Parents Against SSFL.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Melissa Bumstead, and I serve as co-director of Parents Against Santa Susana Field Lab. First, I want to congratulate Chair Nahai and the members of the board for the recent legal victory against Boeing. As a member of the community directly impacted by the SSFL, as you know, my daughter is a two-time cancer survivor. I just wanted to say how deeply grateful I am to the board for listening to our concerns about the toxic pollution coming from the SSFL and entering the Los Angeles River. Thank you for taking decisive, meaningful action to protect public health and the environment. I'm especially relieved and encouraged that the updated NPDES permit now requires Boeing to use modern monitoring technology for PCBs and PFAS in the effluent coming from the SSFL. This is a critical step forward. I also look forward to the release of the Silvernail and R1 pond infiltration study, which we believe will provide further transparency and accountability. As you may know, Physicians for Social Responsibility, my group, Parents Against Santa Susana Field Lab, and the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility are currently suing the Department of Toxic Substance Control over its settlement agreement with Boeing. We believe that the DTSC has violated CEQA by refusing an opportunity for environmental review and silencing public input about the changes that undid the original cleanup agreements. The 2007 cleanup agreement stated that the complete cleanup was to be done by 2017, and at that time it was to have a permanent groundwater system in place. Neither of these have occurred. The settlement agreement is the cornerstone of the Programmatic Environmental Impact Report, PEIR, and this will leave the vast majority of the SSFL contamination in place indefinitely, which will pose an ongoing threat to human health, wildlife, the environment, and our water resources. I share this because DTSC's decision to bypass CEQA is yet another example of that agency's troubling pattern of sidestepping oversight and cutting corners in ways that increase public risk. In contrast, the Water Board has demonstrated a strong commitment to your mission and to the health and safety of our community, and we are grateful for your leadership. We continue to rely on your vigilance in protecting our water. Thank you for your time and continued dedication.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, next speaker virtually is Walter Lamb.
Thank you, Chair Nahai. Thank you, board members. Some questions on the screen that we are having a hard time getting answers to. There was no verbal discussion of Biona in the executive officer's report, but hopefully you all read the written executive officer's report, which indicated that since March, your staff had been working to try to find money for CDFW to revise its EIR, and that money fell through. So we're curious why the previous executive officer reports didn't mention that. That's something we would have liked to have known and been involved, you know, at least had an opportunity to comment on. You know, the thing we would have emphasized is that spending public money to revise the environmental impact report is not a good use of public money, because the environmental impact report is worthless as a document without a federal environmental impact statement when it comes to the Biona wetlands restoration process. I do not know if you as board members have any idea how much money CDFW is needs for the effort to revise the AR and then also the effort to finalize the EIS. And then the EO report that said that since the source of funding that they were seeking fell through, they're now exploring other sources of funds. And we'd like to know what sources of funds they're exploring, how long they think it will take to find out either that those sources of funds also fell through. I think it's important to understand that the Department of Fish and Wildlife has now been seeking funds to revise its EIR for 2 years. So there's a July application to the Wildlife, a July 2023 application to the Wildlife Conservation Board. Board member Camacho, you had indicated last December that you didn't think the lack of funding was really an excuse to not be making progress on TMDLs. And you supported Chair Nahai's comments that he really wanted another update. That was 7 months ago, and we have no idea what the status is of that to update. This is important. The only way to break this broken record, I mean, I guess there are two ways. Is one is we could throw up our hands and say, I guess we just need to quit our mission, dissolve the organization, and stop caring about the Biana wetlands. That's one way, and that's probably not going to happen. The other way would be for there to be some leadership and to start getting answers on these questions, and specifically a schedule. Now, your staff has consistently said they don't think a schedule is necessary because it won't make things go faster. It's worth noting that things aren't going at all. You have a car driving, you know, 0 miles per hour. If anything, going backwards, you know, the idea isn't to make it go faster. It's to make it go at all. A schedule isn't to make things go faster. It's to allow you to monitor progress, just like what I heard from the Department of Toxic and Substances Control. I will close on an unrelated note, but something I also spoke about last week. We are going to continue to come to this board to discuss this board's policy in terms of reacting to pressure from the federal government to stop talking about climate change and ocean acidification. That's perfectly appropriate. We will continue that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for your comments. Okay, next card I have for a virtual speaker is William Preston Bowling. Mr. Bowling, go ahead, please.
Unmuted. All right, perfect. Thank you very much. I want to remind everyone regarding the Santa Susana Field Lab that it is the headwaters to the Los Angeles River and the headwaters to the Arroyo Simi. The multiple lines of evidence approach really takes us backwards, and the community has fought so hard to get a proper cleanup, and I just want you to consider that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Next card is from Jenny Knack.
Good morning. Knack? Jenny Knack, Parents Against FFL. I'd also like to extend my congratulations and gratitude regarding the victory in upholding the strengthened SSFL and PDS permit. Withstanding Boeing's pressure and influence is no small task, as is influenced by the inability of DTSC to do so. I look forward to the release of the Silvernail and R1 pond infiltration studies, as we've been long advocating to see these. We hope that to view these as soon as possible without undue delays. I'd also like to share that with you that in court, Boeing requested that they not be required to release the SSFL and PDS PCB data to the public. So just think about that for a moment. I'd like to attempt to quickly provide information DTSC is admitting, as they essentially failed to tell you much of anything of substance regarding their update today about what's underway at SSFL. I hope you can recognize this and find it as troubling as I do, as they gave you zero information about the plans they've recently released to the public has been met with incredible opposition. Currently, as Bowling just mentioned, DTSC is rolling out their multiple lines of evidence strategy, another attempt to further weaken cleanup for the NASA and DOE land parcels, allowing them to implement a minimal cleanup such as is being given to Boeing in the settlement agreement and subsequent PEIR through blatant exploitations of loopholes regarding non-detect background samples and manipulations through modeling strategies. The MLE just illustrates DTSC's abandonment of their legally binding AOC agreements, which mandated a cleanup to background for NASA and DOE. We'd be happy to provide the board with more information on these plans, since DTSC is failing to do so. We understand that this board moves separately from DTSC and has shown a willingness to stand against the responsible parties when evidence of their wrongdoing has been brought before you. We ask that you stay committed to enforcing the strengthened NPDES permit to the fullest extent possible, and to analyze the new forthcoming data with a critical eye and understanding that the pressures that Boeing is exerting to lessen their remediation responsibilities at the site will inevitably result in continued exceedances in SSFL runoff. The less DTSC requires of Boeing in regards to remediation, the more your responsibility to protect those living around the site from migrating runoff will become our last and only hope for protection. So I sincerely hope
that you understand what we have at stake and can recognize how the omissions and reframing of DTSC's update is problematic and alarming as it provides continued cover for the responsible party's influence at the site. Thank you so much for your continued ethical actions and decisions regarding our site. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. The last card that I have is from Dori Raskin. Are we able to locate Dori Raskin?
I still see her online.
I'm here.
Oh.
I'm here.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank you. I'm sorry I got messed up with my computer thing. All right. I've been involved with trying to get the Rocketdyne or Sunnyside Center Field Labs cleaned up for 30-plus years, more than 30 years. And it's been very frustrating with DTSC being in bed with Boeing, NASA, and DOE. And it's like hitting our heads against the wall. And as I say, the public doesn't trust DTSC, their actions of, for instance, of allowing DOE to, a number of years ago, to explode a building that was radioactive and not having all the proper safety involved. Or allowing, in 2013, allowing Boeing to take their radioactive contaminated waste and let it be recycled in a in Simi Valley that wasn't licensed to do that, exposing workers. I'm just asking you to be strong and to don't allow Boeing, NASA, DOE, and DTSC to push you in a direction where the community will be affected. I urge you to be strong and to fight against the polluters, because you're the only ones that we have to help us, because DTSC is supposed to enforce the 2010 agreement for complete cleanup, and it's not happening. So we need to be doing it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much for your comments. Those are all of the cards that I have. Do we have anybody in the Zoom who, anybody else who may want to speak?
That's all we have, Chair Nahai.
Okay. Okay. There were some issues that I wanted to ask staff about, but I want to defer first to other board members. Anything, Vice Chair?
I just wanted to say, echo Board Member Mendez's comments to the students, to thank you for not only coming and presenting to us today, but also for your work and looking into careers in public interest and environmental protection, environmental justice. I've had a rewarding career in that field, and just it's really heartening to see others who are taking up the mantle and doing this work. So thank you for the work that you have been doing. With regard to, I did have a question about, I think that staff was going to address that Mr. Tahir has been communicated with, but I don't know if you want me to hold that, have us all speak, and then we can do that.
That is my question, and I do have a comment on that as well. So,
Should I ask that now?
But you can go ahead. You can.
Oh,
pose
that
it.
Was so. It's my understanding that Mr. Tahir mentioned not being communicated with about issues, including time, and that EO has communicated with him. I think that would be helpful to hear. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Board Member Ashton. I have communicated with Mr. Ray Tahir on May 23rd and June 25th. I emailed him the Water Board's regulation related to public comments and the time request criteria, and I haven't heard a response back to him, so I'm not sure if he's receiving my emails. I'm replying to the same email. He's sending me his emails. If he would like, he can possibly send another email address to our board clerk and see if
that's a better way to get to him, but I am responding to his emails and requests. Thanks.
Thank you. And then I just, third, wanted to mention with regard to the comments that were made by Walter Lamb, not necessarily the comments, but the slide heading of lack of transparency. Our staff is working on a multitude of issues, and they are incredibly hardworking and determined. And we don't address every single item that every single member of the staff is working on at every single meeting, because we would be here for days listening to all of the good work that they're doing. And so we are mentioning only the things that are relevant and necessary for that month. But we do have staff available all of the time to the public who have, I know, been communicating with him and others about all of the issues that people, all of the questions that people have. And we also allow this time for public comment to have that dialogue. But starting with saying that there's a lack of transparency really shuts down dialogue and communication. And so I hope that in the future we can use different language, because I know that our staff is working incredibly hard. So thank you to the staff.
Thank you. Marissa?
Yes, thank you. I also want to echo our thanks and acknowledgement of the interns that are here today, and also to Ben. I can't see your face right now, but I saw you standing up there like a proud papa. So, you know, all of this good work comes from good teaching as well. My main commentary is about the Santa Susana Field Lab, if I may. For those of you who haven't been involved in the entire stretch of it, this has been a long, arduous, painful, and for some, you know, fatal journey in the community. And the community members that we heard from Parents Against SSFL have taken it upon themselves to fight the good fight and stand up for the health of their children and of their community members. And I can't tell you how heartening it is to hear that they feel like we're supporting them. And so I wanted to return the gratitude to them for being such warriors. You know, who has the time for such a huge fight, and they've made the time in their life, and this is how change happens. And I know that this board and this staff is absolutely committed to transparency, to open data. I run an organization whose primacy is open data, and to upholding our duty to protect public health to the most stringent degree. And so I wanted to offer that to that community and also wish them well in the road ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Camacho, any comments from you?
Yes. I just wanted to reiterate my thanks to the Parents Against SSFL as well. And in some of the other comments, too, it seemed to be a bit of a contradiction, whereas DTSC had said that there was no opposition or response from the community, but yet this group has said that there is a lot of opposition and concern against some of the recent issues that have come out. So I'm just hoping that staff kind of dig into that and please inform us in terms of, you know, what those points of contention are at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you. So I had a couple of things to mention. First, about Santa Susana. Not only is this board committed to transparency, transparency is required of us. We have a public process. The board members cannot meet except in very limited circumstances in closed session on litigation matters or personal matters. Apart from that, our deliberations have to happen in public. So transparency is ingrained. In fact, it's demanded of us by law. And part of our commitment to transparency, as you saw today, is to invite DTSC to appear at this board and to explain to the public just what is happening. I think one of the speakers asked this board to hold DTSC accountable. DTSC is a sister agency. They're not accountable to us. We cannot order DTSC to do one thing or another. We're sister agencies. It's not like one of us is superior to the other. What we can do, however, is to help inform the community, to help inform the community as to what DTSC is doing. And the reason why I asked DTSC about the extensions that have been happening and whether the public knows about them was I hope that the DTSC website, where these extensions are being posted, are readily accessible so that people can actually see that without having to go through innumerable clicks to see what is happening. But we remain committed to the health of the community around the Santa Susana Field Lab and to ensuring that the cleanups occur. But DTSC's jurisdiction is DTSC's jurisdiction. But as I said, we will do what we can in that regard. I had a question or a comment regarding some of what Mr. Lam was saying, and we're always, you know, grateful for his presentations before the board. But a couple of the questions that he put up on the screen almost assumed that our staff had an obligation to go out and find funding for CDFW. That is just not the case. Staff can you know, provide ideas, maybe point to directions, but to pose questions in such a way that when are you going to get the funding for fish and wildlife, there is no obligation on the part of staff to do that, and I just want to make sure that is clear, and I think it should also be, you know, beyond question that the health of Bayona is something that is very much top of mind for us. But what happens at CDFW is not something that we can direct. It's not something that we can control. And I think Mr. Lam is well aware of that. And then finally, regarding Mr. Tahir's comments, and Mr. Tahir is with us at every meeting. We always respect his comments, want him to be here. He's a voice to be listened to. But there are a couple of comments that I want to make regarding, again, transparency, responsiveness, and communication. It is my understanding that our executive officer has written a number of emails, not one, I think two or perhaps three emails to Mr. Tahir, but has received no response from him. So I would invite Mr. Tahir, if he's still listening to this, to please email Susanna Arredondo your current working email address so that she can communicate with you on the questions that you have. Regarding the timing issue, I will say this. 3 minutes has been the rule for public forum at this board for longer than I can remember. And I started off on this board in 1997, so I have quite a long memory. It is proven sufficient for folks to appear and address the board in public forum on items that may have nothing to do with anything on the agenda. In fact, don't have anything to do with the agenda, but it is something that a member of the public just wants to express. That is our process, openness and transparency. However, there have to be reasonable limits, and I think even though the law doesn't expressly require that there be a public forum segment in our processes. We're committed to do that. We want to hear from the public on whatever is on the public's mind that's within the work of the board. Now, when extra time is required, it is in the discretion of the chair to agree to provide that extra time. Just today, extra time was requested for a very compelling reason. Interns wanted to have some additional time to talk to the board because this would be good practice for them, because this would be an opportunity for them to express their views within 3 minutes. I refused that request, even though I think it's a noble thing. I refused it because I want to be fair to everybody who's appearing before us. But when we have a speaker who appears before us at every meeting and knows very well the three-minute rule and has not asked for additional time and yet arrogates to himself the power to exceed that time, I think that's disrespectful to the board. And it puts me in a position that I absolutely do not want to be in, to say, your time is up, please stop. So I would ask for that respect in return. And when there is a compelling reason for extra time to be granted, I can assure everyone that I will do that. So that's my talk on that, and I will stop. And sorry for going on, and we'll go on to our next agenda item, unless board members have anything to add. Okay. All right. Our next agenda item are uncontested items and seeking an approval on the uncontested items. They are items 8, 9, and 10, because we took 12 off the uncontested items and we've already voted on item 12. So it's 8, 9, and 10. So number 8 is consideration of tentative termination of waste discharge requirements and MPDES permit for Camrosa Water District. Item 9 is consideration of tentative termination of WDRs for land treatment unit operations for the Helaco Engineering Company in Oxnard. And number 10 is consideration of tentative amendment to WDRs and water reclamation requirements for the Camrosa Water District. So those are our uncontested items. And if I could have a motion and a second for approval of those items, I would dearly welcome it.
So moved.
Thank you. Motion from Board Member Christensen and a second from Vice Chair Ashton, who's second. Reaching for her microphone. Thank second. You very much. I'm psychic.
I know, that was good.
Could we have the roll call, please?
Vice Chair Ashton?
Yes.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Rowe. Okay, the next item on our agenda is our sole contested item today, which is the MPES WDRs for RV Development LLC for the Royal Vista Residential Development file. So I will first ask if board members want to take a break, or shall we plow forward? Board Member Camacho, are you okay to continue? You don't need a break?
No, let's continue.
Okay. All right. So the next item is consideration of tentative WDRs for RV Dev, LLC for the Royal Vista Residential Development. It's file number 24-084. And I will now administer the vote. The oath. Will everyone testifying on item 11 please stand and take the following oath? Okay. Do you promise that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury. Please respond by saying I do or yes.
I do.
All right. So let us then first hear from our staff.
Good morning, Chair Nahai and members of the board. My name is Valerie Zara, and I am the staff engineering geologist in charge of this project in the Section 401 certification unit. Today, I will present for your consideration item 11, tentative waste discharge requirements for the Royal Vista Residential Development Project. Next. How do I do next slide? I can't. Okay. Thank you. The proposed WDR is for a dredge and fill project for the applicant RV Development LLC to develop 360 single-family residential units on approximately 75 acres of land in Roland Heights, located in Los Angeles County, to meet the local housing demand. The pictures on the slide show the location of the project and the arrangement of the 360 residential units. Dredge and fill permits are issued to applicants for activities that may result in a discharge of dredge or fill materials into waters of the state, such as development projects like the one before you today. These projects are usually regulated by a Clean Water Act Section 401 certification, water quality certification, issued by the executive officer in coordination with a Clean Water Act Section 404 permit issued by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. In this particular case, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers found that the channels to be impacted by the project were not considered waters of the United States because the channels are ephemeral and not subject to the Clean Water Act per the federal Waters Protection Rule. Therefore, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers did not require a Clean Water Act Section 404 permit for this project. However, the channels to be impacted by the project are waters of the state and are subject to the California Water Code. Therefore, they are regulated by these waste discharge requirements. The project is located on a site which had been an existing golf course since the 1960s. Here you can see a map of the project's site. It's hard to see. The blue lines indicate waters of the state. The project site includes seven areas considered as jurisdictional waters of the state. The project will result in the removal of 0.3 acres, 2,994 linear feet of waters of the state, of which approximately 0.04 acres consist of wetlands and 0.26 acres consist of non-wetland streams. Permanent impacts to earthen drainage ditch, which is on the western corner of the project site, concrete ditch 1 on the western side, central concrete V-ditch, eastern side of the larger parcel, southern concrete V-ditch along the eastern parcel. The basin pit is at the very top corner of the southern parcel, and part of East Walnut Drive V-ditch along the northern extent of the project will occur as a result of the residential development and its associated infrastructure, whereas permanent impacts to the East Walnut Drive roadside ditch will occur as a result of road improvements to East Walnut Drive. The project will grade and fill all but two areas of the drainages on site. The eastern earthen V-ditch and part of East Walnut Drive V-ditch will remain untouched, resulting in 0.03 acres, 1,211 linear feet of waters preserved, and the remaining 0.3 acres of streams and wetlands graded. The project will also add a new private stormwater system within the site that will serve the new residential development. This is a representative photo of Concrete Ditch 1. It spans a length of 233 linear feet and totals 0.02 acres. The slide shows East Walnut Drive Concrete V-ditch. It extends for a length of 249 linear feet and totals 0.02 acres. This is the East Walnut Drive earthen ditch. This ditch extends 466 feet and totals 0.032 acres.
The southern concrete V-ditch extends through 1,450 linear feet and totals 0.17 acres. This central concrete V-ditch extends for a length of 305 linear feet and totals 0.02 acres. This slide shows the wetland feature, which leads into a storm drain on the property. The wetland spans a length of 253 linear feet and totals 0.04 acres. This slide shows one of the two irrigation ponds on the project site. These features are not jurisdictional as they are man-made features solely utilized for irrigation purposes. In order to minimize impacts to water quality during construction, the permit requires multiple best management practices related to site management and handling of hazardous materials, erosion control, and stormwater management. In order to comply with the California no net loss policy, the permittee will be required to provide compensatory mitigation for permanent impacts to the waters of the state at a 3.3 to 1 ratio and a 5 to 1 ratio for wetland impacts. To do so, RV Development LLC has purchased a total of 0.98 acres of enhancement credits at the Soquel Canyon Mitigation Bank. These credits consist of 0.7 acres of perennial stream system enhancement and 0.28 acres of ephemeral stream system enhancement, which correspond to the type of project area impact. This photo was taken during our field visit to the Soquel Canyon Mitigation Bank, and it's located in an area where 0.7 acres of perennial stream enhancement has taken place. To the right of the stream, the area has been enhanced by removal of exotic and invasive species, as well as planting with native riparian species. Above the perennial stream enhancement area, this photo shows an area that is representative of the type of mitigation within the 0.28 acres of ephemeral stream enhancement. The area was planted with native riparian plants and is meeting success criteria after the irrigation water had been stopped. As you can see from the photos of this mitigation site, the functions and values of the jurisdictional areas are significantly higher than those of the areas being impacted on the proposed project site. These before and after photos show the general area of the ephemeral stream enhancement. The top photo was taken in 2016. It shows very sparse ruderal vegetation, and the bottom photo, taken in 2023, is indicative of the current condition, which meets compensatory mitigation success criteria. Public notice of the tentative order was provided from May 6 to June 5, 2025. We received two comment letters. In the next few slides, I'll go over some of the key comments we received and staff responses to these comments. One of the main comments received was regarding sensitive habitat at risk on the golf course. Since the golf course closure, natural wetlands had formed, which were supported by the waters on the property. The comment indicated that critical habitat for animals such as hawks, herons, owls, raccoons, and bats would be impacted. The Los Angeles Board carefully considered wildlife and water resources and is requiring significant mitigation in these WDRs to ensure no net loss of waters of the state. A portion of the waters on site will remain in addition to the compensatory mitigation being provided at the mitigation bank. 0.98 acres of stream enhancement credits have been purchased already to offset this loss. Staff verified the mitigation sites are performing well by meeting strict success criteria standards and improving ecosystem functions compared to the existing conditions of the proposed areas to be impacted. The second main comment was raised on premature construction and property on the property and the timing of bat surveys associated with those activities. A portion of the golf course was impacted for the demolition of a maintenance building and some vegetation clearing had occurred. Staff confirmed during a site visit that waters of the state were not impacted with previous demolition and vegetation activities on the project site. These activities would have occurred under Los Angeles County permitting jurisdiction. For the proposed project under the tentative WDRs, additional BAT surveys are required before vegetation removal occurs in regulated areas to protect the bats. This is enforced in the WDR mitigation measures. Other permits for previous activities would fall under LA County jurisdiction. The third comment raised concerns about the accuracy of the consultant's biological study and jurisdictional findings that were supplied in the application. Water Board staff reviewed the jurisdictional delineation and confirmed findings through site visits and aerial photography, ensuring the biological and jurisdictional data supporting the project are accurate with respect to acreages of state waters and the types of impact proposed. The fourth main comment is that the southern concrete V-ditch was illegally constructed on the project site. Aerial research indicates that the concrete ditch was constructed sometime between 1962 and 1988. This construction predates modern environmental regulations, and no permit from our agency would have been required at the time of the construction for this type of concrete V-ditch. Today's regulatory framework, including these tentative WDRs, ensures current and future impacts are managed to protect waters of the state. The options for the board on this item are to adopt the tentative order as proposed, to modify and adopt the revised tentative order, or not adopt the tentative order. The staff recommendation to the board is to adopt the tentative waste discharge requirements for the Royal Vista Residential Development Project as proposed. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I have a comment card from Thune and Pfeiffer, from the company. I don't know whether this is just to answer questions or just to answer questions. Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, then we'll go now to board questions. I'll start with board member Camacho. Do you have any questions on this item?
Chair Nahai, we have public commenters in the Zoom meeting. Sorry, virtual commenters.
Oh, okay. So who?
It looks like we have a John Cork.
All right, so go ahead, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is John Conk with RBDev LLC, representing the applicant. I'm just here to answer questions as well, so thank you.
Right. Thank you very much. Anybody else in the Zoom?
I see Jenny Knack on. I'm not sure. I believe she spoke earlier. I'm not sure if she wants to speak on this as well.
I believe she spoke on SSFL, but do you have any comments on this item, Ms. Knack?
If not, then that's it.
No, I'm so sorry. No comments.
Okay. All right, so we'll go to board member questions then. Board member Camacho, anything from you?
Yes, I have a couple of questions in regards to the mitigation sites. And so I was wondering if staff could talk about how the mitigation ratios were determined, what methodology you used, and also in the long term, who is responsible for ensuring that the mitigation sites continue to meet the criteria beyond this development, post-construction of this development.
I'll begin with explaining how we come to the ratios. In order to achieve no net loss, we generally start looking at the functions and values of what's being impacted. And, for example, if it was a temporary impact where something might be graded and allowed to regrow and it's going to remain natural, that might receive something like a 2-to-1 ratio. And then the ratios generally for most of our permits have to be consistent with everything that we're permitting. countywide between LA and Ventura County. So we try to remain consistent somewhere between 3-1 to 5-1. And if it was maybe an enforcement issue, it might go up to 7-1. We have preferred projects to use mitigation banks because they are comprehensive, big, large restoration projects as compared to a private developer doing, you know, maybe 0.25 acres on site. We found that studies have shown that doing smaller little projects aren't achieving the no net loss, and we generally allow many applicants to use a mitigation bank to offset the loss so that we get something that has significantly higher functions and values. The mitigation bank is using qualified people to draw out each specific type of mitigation area and take a really valid accounting of those numbers. And as an applicant buys a piece, it's deducted from the accounting, and so it's all very clear how much mitigation is left in our county. And we're having a really big problem in Los Angeles and Ventura County with not having enough mitigation areas. And we have some new wetland mitigation banks coming online, which we're really excited to see. But it's been a struggle to find the space and the opportunity to do that. Soquel was chosen because it's generally leading into the lower San Gabriel, just as this project had, it's part of San Jose Reach, leading down to the same area. So it was general vicinity, and that's why this one was chosen. I hope that helps. And if you have any other questions, we'd be happy to. Yeah. And this is Celine, who's also in our.
Hi, I'll just introduce myself. Hi, Celine Galan. I'm the manager for the regional program section that includes the foreign program. And just to answer the second part of your question, whenever we have mitigation, compensatory mitigation, either from a mitigation bank or perpetuity responsible, they are responsible for the mitigation in perpetuity.
I would add on to that they usually have endowment funds. And for example, this site, we checked it and we can see that the irrigation lines were put in. Usually mitigation sites have a couple years where they have to be irrigated because of our, you know, we have drought everywhere. And we know that generally it takes 2 to 3 years to get things established, and then they have to turn the water off. And if it's not successful, and if it doesn't meet strict mitigation success criteria by literally counting all of the plants and making sure that it's successful enough, they have to turn the water back on, and mitigation continues until they meet the success criteria. And so this one is actually functioning quite well.
Yeah, and so I'm really glad that I guess the permittee started very early in trying to, assess the mitigation that's going to be required for this project and move forward to ensure that they had a successful site ahead of construction, from what my understanding is correct.
That's correct. As well as providing within the development, they provided a buffer around their project. And then they have two open parcel areas. If you want to see the map again, I could show you. But they have two parcels that are going to remain as open space. For example, for habitat, when that question came up, it's going to be planted with coast live oaks, approximately, I don't know the exact number, but somewhere in the 40 range for the upper open space parcel. And then the lower parcel will have approximately 20. So if raccoons or possums, whatever wants to go there and use, they can still have a place to go, you know, live. And then there's also a portion of one drainage. So if you see the green, that's just green, that's going to remain as an open space, and that'll be planted with coast live oak, as well as the bottom one at the very bottom. And then there's a buffer around the entirety of the project that remains as like a buffer space for vegetation to exist. And then on the parcel on the east side, on the right side, along the perimeter, the drainage that existed there will be allowed to remain. Mm-hmm. So they did have to avoid something.
Thank you very much.
Sure, thank you. Board Member Camacho asked some of the questions I had, but maybe I could get a little bit more clarity on the, or they call it mitigation enhancement credits, correct? Or
enhancement credits. There are different types. There's restoration, there's enhancement, there's preservation, but we don't generally allow preservation. We ask for on-the-ground mitigation.
And thank you for that. And then, and where exactly? You said somewhere in San Gabriel Valley these credits were going to apply?
Soquel Canyon. It's closer to the, if you went past Roland Heights and you get toward Chino Hills, it's right in those canyons right there.
Okay. And then the how are the credits work? So it's they purchase them. So how much are the credits, the market value for those credits?
I don't know the exact cost.
Maybe we can ask
Tienan might have the exact cost. I just know that these days mitigation has kind of a going rate, and it depends on which bank. Maybe Tienan can help answer the cost.
Hi, Chairman Mendez. So mitigation banks generally operate in the sense that, like Valerie indicated before, these are large areas that have been set aside so that, you know, developers are not conducting postage stamp is what we call it, mm-hmm. mitigation. These are large areas where you can see intact, contiguous habitat and streams be restored over time. This mitigation bank has been in existence for a very long time, and in fact, it's currently sold out of these types of credits, and that's highlighting the need that Valerie indicated before of trying to find more and more banks to service this region. So this area, the bank credit costs are always determined between the bank sponsor and the developer. Mm. They are in the hundreds of thousands per acre. I don't know exactly the cost because that's, you know, not always privy to me, but I can assure you that, you know, the ratio here that the bank that the board required for this project of 3-1 for impacts to ephemeral streams and then 5-1 for the wetland impact is definitely commensurate. And there was a question earlier about, well, what happens to the area? Who manages it in the long term? There is also a very large endowment that the bank sponsor paid to the Rivers and Land Conservancy, which is a vetted organization that does this type of work, manages land for the benefit of the habitat, maintains it in the open space condition. And so that entity steps in once the mitigation has received, you know, its performance standards and is effectively signed off. That entity then uses the endowment funds to go in and make sure that those habitats remain in that condition in perpetuity.
Thank you for that. And then one last question for clarity.
To answer the price, actually, Jenny found the price. They paid $480,000 for the credits.
$480,000. Okay. And thank you for that. And the last, I see we do have like two or three critical comments from community members or stakeholders, but there's no formal opposition, correct? It's just response letters?
We wrote the response to the comments, yeah. And we posted those.
Okay, but there was an opposition, like a formal opposition to the project?
Not.
The written comments were in opposition to the project.
Okay, yes. All right. Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to thank you for your presentation and for explaining the compensatory mitigation measures, as well as addressing the comments from the opposition with regard to sensitive habitats. So no questions, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
It sounds like I might be the difficult one, so apologies in advance. I have a few questions about the development itself. Do you happen to know the median price of the homes that are proposed?
We don't know the price, but what I do know is that it is going to be mixed development. It's not going to be 360 single-family homes. It's going to be duplex, triplex, townhomes. It's going to be a mix so that it offers various price points.
Okay. And assuming it complies with, you know, Section 8 and affordability requirements in California.
I can't speak specifically about that, but what I can say in terms of the types of impacts that this project was going to have, we look at alternatives analysis of different designs for the proposed project. We look at it mainly for impacts, mm-hmm. but in terms of the alternatives, if they would have considered different alternatives, it would have had a significantly different number of units. It would have had, mm-hmm. you know, most alternatives, mm-hmm. I think we have four alternatives. Alternatives 2, 3, and 4 have something like a range of 8% reduction in units to 20% reduction in units. So we try to look at the best alternative for this area, which is already it's developed. And we're used to seeing pristine habitat. We're used to seeing things like Newhall, Agua Dulce, where it's pristine, where there's nothing there, and we look at the resources a little differently. But this one, we had to take a close look at alternatives in terms of their configuration to get that many units and to get the mixed type of units. A lot of the developments we had seen over the past 20 years have all been single family, most of them, mm-hmm. until Newhall started changing how they're doing that.
I appreciate that. And I know I'm getting a little rangy in my questions here, but I promise I will tie it back in. Do we know anything about the homeless population that may or may not be in these ditches or on that property since it's been unused for some stretch of time?
It's vacant currently. When I visited the site, I didn't see any evidence of that. And I've been through all of our channels all over the place. I've been in with the sheriffs to help in the homeless encampments, and I know what that looks like. This area I didn't see any evidence. It was not even any real trash in the storm drain, and I did look around, and I didn't see any evidence of that.
Board Member Christensen, yes. If you have questions also about related to the development, I know you're getting around to assessing the impacts and configuring.
Yes. Yeah.
But if I do notice that John Conk has raised his hand, I think that means because he's available if you wanted to ask him any questions about.
Oh, sure. I forgot that he was on the line.
No, that's okay. But
I would love to hear what he has to say.
Hi, thank you for your question, Board Member Christensen. I wanted to just respond about
before
the price.
You respond, before you respond, did you take the oath that I administered?
I did.
You did?
I did.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Please go ahead.
I just wanted to respond about the pricing of the homes. So we have 360 homes. 82 of our 360 homes will be affordable units. And what the county is very excited about is these 82 units are not for rent. These are for sale. So these are for moderate income families to be able to afford a home. You know, hopefully you're achieving the American dream of home ownership. And most projects that you find in the county that have affordable housing will be rental units. Rarely do they ever see for sale units in the affordable category. So 23% of our homes will be affordable. The other 278 will be market rate homes.
Understood.
And we also do take great pride in maintaining the property. We just completed mowing of the property just in the last few weeks to keep the property clear in preparation for construction. So related to the homeless activity, there's no homeless activity on the site.
Understood. Thank you so much. And I have one final question for the staff, and then I assume we'll deliberate after.
I have a question as well, and then we'll deliberate.
Okay, yeah. So last question about the postage stamp mitigation versus these mitigation banks. When you say the postage stamp approach is not effective, what do you mean? Do you mean in terms of habitat or?
We've seen so many developments over, I've been in the 401 section, this is almost 25 years. I've seen all of the housing developments, and historically when an applicant would go and do mitigation themselves, it wouldn't be successful.
And but successful in
terms of, you know, a developer, they get their permit, and then they go and they build their houses. That's what they wanted to achieve. And then they might have agreed to do, let's just say they agreed to do 2 acres of riparian restoration on their property, like, or actually creation of, we're going to create a wetland. We're going to create riparian habitat along the side of a creek. Well, most of the time they either forget about it, they don't water it, and then we have to go out there and check on them and tell them, This is not successful, and we're losing habitat already because of the impacts. And then we're finding that these permittee responsible mitigation sites, a lot of the smaller parcels, were showing to be not successful. And then there was a study that was done. Somebody from UCLA came in and did a study of all of our records and found that the mitigation sites that were permittee responsible just were not meeting success criteria. And we started realizing that the larger mitigation banks were doing what they needed to do in order to provide the no net loss.
Understood. Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
All right, so I had a couple of questions to ask. So in again, it has to do with some of the wording of the package that you sent to us, and I just want to get clarity for the record and for myself so I understand. So regarding the mitigation, the compensatory mitigation, it says the proposed mitigation will enhance, it uses that word, enhance, a total of 0.98 acres of perennial and ephemeral waters of the state. Do we mean that, or do we really saying here that the developer will purchase these credits in this mitigation bank that is going to be managed in perpetuity, to use your words, by this endowment or this entity that is in charge of managing it? So what does the word enhance mean? What exactly will happen directly as a result of the purchase of these credits?
Well, they were already purchased, and there are various types. There's restoration, where you have a site that you might need to do some recontouring. You might need to, you know, recreate a channel and recreate something. Okay. That would be restoration credit.
Uh-huh.
And then enhancement credit means that this site was already there. It was just degraded. There was a lot of cattle grazing. So when you have that, a lot of ruderal weeds come out, and it's not good riparian vegetation. For example, like we have lots of birds in our region that we care about, the vireo, the gnatcatchers, and, you know, all of the species. You can go on for days about all of the species that need these riparian-specific plants. So enhancement means is that you have an existing setting
uh-huh.
that's degraded,
uh-huh.
and they're going to enhance it. So when you saw those before and after, we can go back to the before and after photos.
Okay. They are going to enhance
it? It's already been enhanced. It's already...
Okay, I mean that...
They already did the work to get the site that was a very degraded site into something that looks like it's thriving.
Okay. Who already did that
work? The mitigation, SoCal Mitigation Bank.
Okay. What is the name of the mitigation? What is the name of this entity that does this work, that maintains this?
It's Land Veritas.
What is it?
Land Veritas.
Okay.
Owns the SoCal Mitigation Bank.
Okay.
So I just want to reiterate Valerie's response to your question. I think you came to an understanding, but the developer of this property is purchasing credits at a site where enhancement already happened. Then okay. There's no new enhancement for this property.
All right.
This property's paying for something that already happened.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I appreciate that. Because again, just in terms of wording, You know, it says LA Board has considered the impacts of the proposed projects will have on water resources, beneficial uses of water, including wildlife and so on, and has determined that those impacts will be avoided and minimized. Then it goes on, as long as the project is carried out in the manner consistent with the tentative WDRs, right? And compensatory mitigation. But the compensatory mitigation, you're telling me, has already happened.
That's correct.
Okay. This is not something that we're waiting to happen in the future. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the confusion. It's just standard language in our WDRs. So I think that I understand it's bringing confusion, and that could be rectified in future permits for sure.
Okay. I'm just trying to clarify for the record that we're not talking about the developer doing something in the future that has to be monitored. This is work that has already happened.
Yes. Correct.
Correct? Okay. All right, that's all I have. Let's deliberate.
One more clarifying question.
Sure,
where
course.
Is this mitigation bank, like what's the location as compared to the development site?
It's closer to Chino Hills. And the golf course is located in Roland Heights.
Okay. So a good stretch of, yeah, okay. Yes. Thank you.
I have one more question. And it has to do with precedent setting.
Correct.
Right. I'm trying to think in my mind how many times we've done this. I can't think of too many instances. Jenny will know better than anybody. Because I mean, this is not a practice that one wants to encourage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not because. And so I think. Let me say this: I'm going to vote for the proposed action, but I also want to say that we do not want to have a situation where developers will come in the future and say, you know what, with respect to Royal Vista. You know, we did what we had to do, and yes, it had environmental impacts at the site that the community had some objections to, but you said it was okay because we bought enhancement credits in a mitigation bank 5 miles away, 10 miles away, 20 miles away, the other side of the country. So I just want it to be understood that we need to be very discerning, very careful, and very discriminating in agreeing to this kind of arrangement. You know, environmental mitigation and protection has to be done normally, I would say, has to be done on the property, but I'll...
Chair Nahai, if I may, we hear what you're saying, and we agree. Purchase and mitigate. Mitigation credits is one option. On-site mitigation is another. Valerie explained the pros and cons of those. Purchase of off-site mitigation credits does have some pros administratively related to operation and maintenance and ongoing healthiness of the mitigation site. But we hear what you're saying in directing us in considering future waste discharge requirements that we bring to the board or future 401 certifications and enrollment under general WDRs that staff does under our executive officer's delegated authority. So we get the direction you're giving. And I also just wanted to point out avoidance is the first step that we try and impose on these projects. Valerie works very hard and the other 401 team works very hard to get the developer to design their project to the extent we have under our authority to design the project to minimize the impacts to waters of the state and to habitat, and then only for the remaining impacts that could not be avoided do we discuss mitigation, and then we always push for higher mitigation ratio than is the minimum. And now we hear your input that you want us to explore on-site mitigation as an important option.
Thank you very much for that.
I could add about setting precedents. What we do is we ask developers to push back on their impacts when they show us their preferred design, and it generally always wipes out all of the drainages. And in our history here with this big group, we have issued numerous denials, just stating this is significant impact. We think there are other options that are feasible for this site. And when people bring us an alternatives analysis that's written for Army Corps, which is geared more toward costs, we, even before our regs came out, when we could ask for alternatives analysis, we would ask them, what are the alternatives specific to avoiding impacts to waters? And if they didn't show that, we would just write a denial letter. We've issued so many denial letters, and then the other way that we push back is that I go and confirm, if it's a large housing development, I go and confirm and I measure everything to even make sure that the impacts are being brought forth correctly and accurately, because I've seen a lot of delineations that think they're going to come through and that we're not going to check on them. So first we check on them, then we ask them if they've considered the alternatives. I can give an example of... maybe not. No. Okay. I can give an example of it, but, you know, there's plenty of denials. Yeah.
It's okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. You know, okay. I appreciate that very much. At the same time, we need the housing as well. I see that Board Member Camacho has her hand up.
What I was going to say, too, because I think Jenny was heading towards this direction being provided, but, you know, my experience has been that this postage stamp mitigation approach generally does not work. And a lot of times you have developers that do not, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, casting any disparities on this particular developer, but it's really hard for the regulators to follow up on ensuring that the developer does the mitigation properly. And I think that mitigation banks are a very good way to go. Is not necessarily on the particular site, but sometimes you get better mitigation results a little bit off-site. So you have to look at that whole balance of what's really practical and what type of quality you're going to get at the back end of the project and how much work it's going to be for individual staff to ensure that those mitigation results are realized at the very end of the project and how much work that's going to take. And so I think mitigation banks are a very good alternative, and we do need more of them in the LA Ventura County area. Thanks.
Thank you. Right. Other comments from board members?
I do have a few comments, if I may. Appreciate all of the background that you've given us and all of your experience. And it's definitely resonating about this postage stamp mitigation and how effective they are or not. But here's what I want to offer to this board. This is an example of these decisions that we're all up against more and more in this era, where our planet is sick, our communities are sick, both physically and sort of mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And maybe just looking at the cost to the developer, whether or not the habitat is going to be maximized, and whether or not we need the housing stock, I think we also have to weigh that against sort of our moral, ethical, duty in this moment to try to let little acupuncture opportunities of planetary healing to occur. And you're hearing from a person who used to run a river advocacy organization in Los Angeles where we were advocating for habitat in a concrete ditch. It's a steep hill to climb. And so my concern is that here's a golf course, a former golf course. God bless it that it's no longer being irrigated, and amazing that it was built to be stormwater, a bit of a stormwater detention basin. And it now has habitat on it, unfortunately, for the developer, and fortunately for the community around it, and for the land, right? This mitigation bank is not in this community. It's in a different community. So this community will reap the benefits of 300 more houses, but not the benefits of healed habitat. And beyond habitat, when you allow a space to be either deconcretized or just remain open and natural land, you also get the benefit of stormwater infiltration into our water table. And if you followed that conversation that's happening across LA County, most advocates in that space would advocate for sort of the sponge city approach, urban acupuncture, all of which just means wherever you have these infill opportunities, don't infill and allow that land to actually do its natural organic work. And so I am pretty firmly in the camp of on-site mitigation. Not to say there's anything wrong with a mitigation bank, but I don't love that, you know, the habitat restoration that's happened for this project has already happened, and they're just kind of paying money into it. That means virtually nothing, right? And when I hear credits, I think of the carbon market, which is not working out in our favor, you know, because it's pollution that's happened, and what we need is for less, drastically less pollution to occur, you know, yesterday. And so those sorts of credits don't actually help us. And in my mind, as a fairly bombastic, pessimistic person, I feel like this is life or death. And I was asking all those questions about homelessness and who's there and what's there because, you know, everything, every decision is a trade-off. And, you know, if this is a development that is going to somehow actually service this community, if there are unhoused individuals already living there, you know, wanting to know what happens to them, to weigh it against habitat and stormwater benefits. So this is my soapbox, and I really do firmly believe that we should be scraping and clawing at every inch of new habitat, of new land exposure, of new mitigation. Thank you.
Can I make a comment? Oh, sorry.
Understood. Thank you. Thanks very much. Other comments, Vice Chair?
I was just going to say, a red flag goes up in my mind when we hear credits also with regard to the carbon offsets. But the thing that I found compelling here was that it was still pretty close in the community and is a project that's actually happening as opposed to so many of the carbon credits, which are really nebulous and the same project is happening over and over and over, you know, just in terms of not a real project with a real benefit. And so here we're seeing real tangible benefits. So that gives me hope and peace. The other thing I will say is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think that you mentioned addressing the sensitive habitat questions that were in the letters on the actual property as well. This was just in terms of additional measures. So my understanding is that there are still measures being taken on the property with regard to some of the habitats, the tree
some,
and the habitat
some.
That were there.
There will still be some degradation.
Correct.
There is. And also, if you see that there are those open spaces, many times we get a development project and they put houses over the entire footprint, and that's part of the reason for those open spaces to remain and to be vegetated and with something that the habitat and birds and creatures can come and enjoy.
Great, thank you.
I'd just like to add, I understand the reasonings and the arguments against off-site these credits. I have concerns with them as well, but I also understand the limitations that staff has mentioned here for these particular infill, these large infill development projects. So I would urge also our EO to provide us with that UCLA study that did the analysis of the quote-unquote postage stamp mitigations and inefficiencies with them, so we can all have a look at that, because as our chair has mentioned before, he will be voting for this but has strong concerns around those issues. And I think the more we can understand the issue, if it comes before us, you understand the board's preference that we prefer on-site. I also can speak from a personal experience of, and I won't mention the developer, but last year we moved into one of the first for sale infill development in all of Long Beach in almost 20 years. Everything had been rental rental units, and this particular developer was first to do that. They also have some sites not too far from this area in Whittier. And I've seen some of the mitigation measures that was approved, not by us, but by the city, particularly on greenery and monitoring or maintenance of that. And if you're not really on the developers, they, as you mentioned, they'll forget or they flat out won't do it. And, you know, as an HOA, we have to pull up the city's planning commission documents to see what obligations they had for the permit. But even then, it's so far down along the line that unfortunately the city doesn't really have a response for the non-compliance with some of the permittee obligations. So again, I think we do have strong concerns about these off-site enhancement credits, and look forward to the staff providing us with that UCLA study and understanding some of our key concerns here. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? All right. In that case, I think we should move to a vote. Can I have a motion? Okay. Well, with the strong feeling that this must be a rare exception, I'll move approval of staff recommendation. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
I'll second.
Okay.
I'll let Norma second.
Now, according to the rules, we have a motion, we have a second on the floor. We can have further discussion if the board members want to do it. Okay. So we have a motion, we have a second. Is there any further discussions? Okay. Board Member Camacho, anything further you want to add?
No.
Okay. So in that case, Ms. Rowe, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Ashion?
Yes.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
It's a no for me.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
And Chair Nahai?
A difficult yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. No one can claim that we don't deliberate.
No, I know. I think this is like my second no ever, so I use them sparingly.
No, that's good.
Yeah, that's the point.
Right. That's good. All right. That concludes our board meeting. We will now move to closed session, and I'll ask our legal counsel to announce the items that will be discussed during closed session. And we will recess for closed session, but I don't know that we will return.
No, we don't plan to return after. There won't be anything to report out on, I don't think. Unless there's anything to report out on, then we'd return.
Okay.
So we'll be discussing items 13D, Benjamin Moore and Company, Inc. versus California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Los Angeles Region, item 13K, People of the State of California, ex rel, California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Los Angeles Region versus Prologis et al., and 13R, sub little I, little I, little I, consideration of the appointment, employment or evaluation of performance about a public employee.
Should we also announce that there's no meeting in August and that our next meeting is September 25th?
Sure. We will not meet during the month of August, so the next meeting will be September
25th.
Okay. Thank you.